This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. And we've been getting into a little bit of the teams, the 2-0 squads that we're sold on, or the 2-0 squads that we're not sold on. And we invite you to join that conversation via the Dr. Pepper hotline. That's 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll also get to a Monday Night Football preview with the Fighting Kneecap Biters, the Detroit Lions, taking on the Green Bay Packers. But, Mike, we got to revisit the conversation from earlier today. My Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, getting it done against the Kansas City Chiefs. They showed up, they showed out, and they were fearless when it came to making the calls down the stretch that were going to lead to them putting that game on ice. What was your biggest takeaway from last night's ballgame?
That we need to stop ever having these conversations about doubting Lamar Jackson. Like, I get that his game might not look the way that we're always accustomed to. Like, if you want a guy to go bombs away and throw the ball 40 to 50 times a game, that's not going to be him. But what Lamar was once again, timely in the passing games, overcame some early mistakes on those two pair of interceptions, and then leaned into a skill set that no one else in the league has. Like, Mina Kimes was on with us earlier, our ESPN NFL analyst, and said he is the most dynamic playmaker at any position in the league. And she's right. And so what did Baltimore do? They leaned into that guy. They made him the focal point of what they did on an offense. They had an offensive line that had been shuffled around because of injury that they're trying to get right. And they let Lamar Jackson make them great in the moments that counted. And to me, Chris, as you're looking for this Ravens team to take the next step, that's a huge confidence booster, being able to do it against a team that had kind of been your boogeyman during Lamar and Patrick Mahomes' tenure as pros.
No question about it. I mean, being able to exercise that demon, I think that's going to be a huge step in terms of the Ravens' overall confidence and their belief in the direction that they're going in terms of building out their offense. Like, I'm going to raise my hand as one of those people this offseason that felt like Lamar Jackson had to evolve as a passer, especially down the field outside of the numbers, because I didn't think that they could beat the Kansas City Chiefs playing the brand of ball that they had shown in the previous three seasons. But the reality is they needed to do more of what they've been doing as opposed to trying to switch it up and do something different. Your point, they leaned into their identity, that offense, being able to run the football with their primary ball carrier being their quarterback. And guess what? As a defense, when you try to stop an offense that has the quarterback as a threat to run, it's really, really, really tough because from a number standpoint, you just don't have enough. The offense have a hat on a hat. They got enough blockers, plus they got a ball carrier who, in Lamar Jackson's case, is faster than anybody else that's on the field. So I think we saw that last night in that matchup against that Kansas City defense. Kansas City's got their own problems with that side of the ball. I'm sure we'll get to that. But to me, the biggest takeaway was Lamar Jackson in that Ravens offense being able to show up and show out despite being a little shorthanded with some of the injuries that they had in the preseason, still finding a way to be able to go blow for blow and hang 36 points on the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, Ryan Clark, our ESPN NFL analyst, was on ESPN Radio earlier today, and he talked about Lamar Jackson and why what he's had to do so far seems above and beyond what most are asked.
That Lamar Jackson answered all the questions that we shouldn't have been asking in the first place. Yeah. Mm. Right? Lamar Jackson has done nothing but win and produce since coming into this league, but we always have these imaginary check marks that he has to check off for us to say that the way he plays football can work in the NFL. This dude's only carried this team offensively since becoming the starter, but we still say, but, well, you can't win a playoff game like that. He goes to Tennessee and does it. But you haven't beat Patrick Mahomes, because even though Patrick Mahomes is non-traditional in the way he throws the football or plays quarterback, it's a traditional thing to see a quarterback move the football through the air the way he does. And so it was awesome to watch him last night go out and win in the fashion he did with the roster he's now playing with.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Chris, this is the thing that happens when we get the anonymous sources telling Jeremy Fowler that the league thinks they're going to figure him out this year. Like, it becomes a culture war about the position that Lamar certainly had been at the center of, I think, unfairly. But I don't think you're wrong in saying that they've got to evolve, because one thing about the game flow of this, it was always close. If it get down, if we've seen them get down big in the past, that Tennessee playoff game from a couple years ago, that's the part where we know, all right, we're going to need to see some evolution, but this game was about them identifying a matchup, because that Chiefs defense up front can't stop it right now. They can't hold up in that part, and they stress test those pipes, and they burst. And Baltimore, to their credit, they just kept going back to it. They said, why complicate the situation when we've got a decided advantage, both schematically and personnel-wise, against that group?
Well, Mike, when you're getting 6 yards a pop on the ground, why would you do anything else? Like, I mean, that's the thing that you got to give credit to the Ravens for, especially in that second half, because the Chiefs did open up a double-digit lead, and yet Baltimore stayed tried and true. They stayed true to their identity, and they decided that they were going to run the football, whether it was Latavius Murray or whether Lamar Jackson was doing it himself. So you give them credit in that regard. But as far as them taking advantage of the Chiefs' defense, I mean, that was it. Like, the Chiefs have the worst defense when it comes to yards per play average in the National Football League through 2 weeks, and they identified that, and they stayed on those guys. And credit to them, they were made sure to be efficient in their possessions in the second half. Even though sometimes they got behind the sticks, sometimes they threw themselves for a loss with penalties, they were able to overcome that with outstanding individual efforts. And so that's, to me, the special part about this Baltimore Ravens team as a group that looked so bad on Monday night, short week at home against the defending conference champions. They were able to find a way to be able to get it done. And a lot of that had to do with Lamar Jackson and how special he was.
It also had to do with the fact that they were willing to risk it when it mattered the most. Key fourth down late in that game. Could have punted it, given Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs a long field, a little bit of time on the clock. They decided they were going to let their quarterback and their offense win that game with that fourth down call. Now, on the other side, Chris, Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City are always interesting because as long as Mahomes is there, they're probably going to walk into most seasons as the NFL's favorite in the AFC. They're probably going to walk into most games with us favoring them and believing they can just throw them out of any situation. We saw that finally come to an abrupt end in the Super Bowl last year. They didn't have an offensive line. People like me were still saying, well, I just can't shake this Mahomes thing. And we found out that had a limit. Are we at the limit when it comes to their defense as it's constructed right now? Like, if for this and you, personnel-wise, scheme-wise, is this a Chiefs defense that they can still win a Super Bowl with?
Yeah, I think it is, because they do have pressure players up front, even though Frank Clark and Chris Jones really haven't played like it through the first couple of weeks. They do have guys up front that can get after it, and then you have Tyrann Mathieu on the back end, and you saw how important he is to that defense. I mean, he had the big play, the pick six. He almost came up with another interception in the end zone in the second half in last night's game. So I do think this Chiefs defense can be a bend but don't break unit that specializes in takeaways in order to get off the field. But ultimately, it's going to be led by this Chiefs team is going to be led by their offense and what Pat Mahomes and that unit does. That's where they invested most of their cap dollars at. That's how this team is going to have to win football games. But that means that sometimes in games like we saw last night, that unit has to be a little more patient than they're accustomed to being. And that's why I credit Baltimore for that defense, forcing them to do that. Wink Martindale switched up a little bit, played more zone than he's accustomed to, and tried to be top down and not allow passes over those guys' heads. And I think that paid dividends because you saw a couple of late game miscues that you wouldn't ordinarily see from Pat Mahomes in that Chiefs offense. So I think moving forward for that offense, they're going to have to be more patient in certain games when you have a game script like we saw last night. And I think that kind of maturity will come as the season unfolds. They'll realize who they have to be. You know, sometimes it works like that, Mike. Sometimes you have an idea of what you want to be, but then you realize who you have to be as you get into the meat of your schedule. I think the Chiefs will evolve to that point on the offensive side of the ball.
I think it's a great point, though, about Wink Martindale and that defense. All we heard through the first week after that Monday nighter was, this is their identity. They play man. They're not going to go away from that. And sure enough, they decided, all right, we can say that and we can live by that sword, or we can be what the situation calls for. And it worked out very well as the Ravens get a 36-35 win during Sunday Night Football. Now, a reminder, as the NFL season continues to get underway, make sure you're ready for kickoff with TuneIn, the app that lets you listen to live games, in-depth analysis, and tailored content for your team all season long. Plus, with ESPN Radio on TuneIn, you can listen to comprehensive football coverage from NFL Live, the Fantasy Focus Football, and more, all to fuel your fandom for football. Download the TuneIn app today and start listening everywhere you go. Coming up next, though, we'll take a look. 7 teams right now in the NFL sit with a 2-0 record. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll tell you which teams we are buying out of that group. We want to hear from you, too, next here, ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline, and we've been having a conversation all show long. Which 2-0 teams are you buying and which are you selling? Join the conversation on the Dr. Pepper hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And without further ado, let's get to it. Two or nah, which 2-0 teams are real contenders? We're going to have our producer, Shannon Penn, take it away. Shannon, let's go.
All right, let's hit this first team. Ryan Matlack, please.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
Las Vegas Raiders, 26-17 win over the Steelers. So, Mike Golic Jr., I'll ask you, Las Vegas Raiders, 2-0, you buying it?
I'm not buying it yet. Now, I'm not saying I want to go full bore and say I want to sell them yet, but when you look at the teams they beat so far, Baltimore, I thought reeling from injury, poor plan. I thought that was a lot about the way they approached that game in week one. And then the Steelers team, I think, is going to have a small margin for victory all year. Chris, for me, the thing I really want to see for them is this defense, which has generated pressure, which has been able to help them out a bunch. Can that hold up against better competition? Because so far, I wouldn't count either of the lines the way they approach these games as teams that are really going to test that and make them see, are they going to have to bring pressure? And then how much does that like change life for them?
Mike, I become less and less worried about that defense when their offense can continue to put up points, especially against quality defenses like we saw yesterday. So as far as 2-0 teams go, I am buying stock in the Vegas Raiders. That's right. I said it, and guess what's not too far behind from that? Me buying stock in Derek Carr as an MVP candidate, because that's how good the dude is playing. And in yesterday's game, he showed me something that I hadn't seen from Derek Carr the last couple of years, which is that toughness, getting knocked around by that Steelers front seven and still coming back and making some big-time throws late in that game. The blow of Henry Ruggs was just off the charts. So if Derek Carr can continue to play at this level and that offense can continue to score points, then I feel like that will alleviate some pressure on the defense. And guess what? Defenses play a lot better when they're playing from ahead. And I think that's going to be the Raiders' formula here for the 2021 season.
The Carolina Panthers.
All right, Chris, the Carolina Panthers got a 26-17 win over the Saints. Quickly, are you buying those Panthers?
Yeah, I think I am buying the Carolina Panthers. And it's hard for me to say that knowing the division that they're in with the Saints and the Buccaneers. But this is a team that I realized this offseason wasn't going to be far away. Like last year, they found themselves on the losing side of 8 one-possession games, 8 one-score games. I think they're going to find a way to be able to turn some of those L's from last year into wins this year. And if Sam Darnold can just stay out of his own way long enough for Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson to do their thing, that skill position core coupled with that defense will go ahead and have the Carolina Panthers in the conversation for playoff teams in 2021.
Chris, I'm with you. Give me the Carolina Panthers in this point, and not just for the redemptive Sam Darnold arc, although Joe Brady and that offense took great care of him. They understood the challenge that Saints defense was going to pose, and so what do? Multiple tight end sets, big bodies there, max protection. Keep a quarterback upright so he can get it to DJ Moore and these guys. But man, I'm hype about this defense. Phil Snow in his second year as this coordinator, and what you've seen over the last few years, spending so much of their draft capital on defense, they led the NFL in snaps by defensive rookies last season, and we're starting to see that pay off. Brian Burns in this group on defense, thoroughly outclassed, one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Jameis Winston was under siege the entire afternoon. I know they've changed bodies around up front because of injury right now, and I know the coaching was short-staffed, but whether it's personnel or the way they game plan there, I think there's a lot of bright days ahead for this Carolina unit. Give me these guys at 2-0 right now.
The Arizona Cardinals.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, going through the 7 2-0 teams in the NFL, doing a little buy or sell here. What we got, Shannon?
All right, Mike, Arizona Cardinals, 34-33 win over Minnesota. Mike, you buying these Cardinals?
Not yet. I don't know what it is. I think this is the rest, you know, the past memory I have of this team where we came into last year and I had them as a dark horse playoff team. I had Kyler Murray as dark horse MVP guy. And we saw eventually this style of offense from Cliff Kingsbury has had a shelf life in the NFL. I know Rodney Hudson being over there under center has benefited Kyler a lot. I know they've got AJ Green in these weapons. But Chris, you just pointed it out in the last segment here. When we look at Minnesota and what they've been able to do here, I've gone back and forth on all this one, but ultimately here, I have fears that have not yet been reconciled by this Cardinals offense, and I think I contradicted myself from one segment to the next.
I think you did too, but guess what? I'm going to go the other way on you on this one. I know you're not buying them, but I am buying the Arizona Cardinals, and guess what, Mike? I think the Cardinals are the second-best team in this division, and the NFC West is the best division in football. That's how much I think of them. I know their defense is a work in progress, but they got athletes on that side of the ball, and the defense is just a compliment to what we've seen them do on the offensive side of the ball with Kyler Murray, who I also think is going to be an MVP candidate this coming year. They surrounded him with a lot of weapons this offseason, and for a team that had a really impressive week one, I felt like this was one of those trap games, and the Arizona Cardinals were not having any parts of it. I know that it came down to a missed field goal from the Vikings, but they still found themselves on the winning side of this kind of ball game. I think that's going to bode well for this team moving forward.
Big time snatching defeat from the jaws of victory by that Vikings kicking game, which stop me if you've heard that story before. We will get to the other four teams involved in this conversation coming up next. We're so fired up. We can only get to three right now here. We're brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. The Stugatz very strong in me as I pick the Cardinals in one segment and then go away from them in the other here. That's how you live by the take, baby. We'll get to the rest of those and your Monday Night Football preview heading into the Packers-Lions game after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, guys, you hit the productivity wall after a big lunch, maybe pick a team in one segment and then not pick them in the next segment. I got a solution. 5-Hour Energy Shots are going to help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. So go to 5hourenergy.com today. You're going to find over 15 flavors you can choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, peach mango, and more. There's a flavor for everybody there. But if you're out and about, remember, you can always pick up a 5-Hour Energy Shot right at your local grocery or convenience store, because they're everywhere. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And we've been having a conversation on which 2-0 team are you buying and which are you selling. And since Mike and I have a whole lot to say, we only got halfway through the actual list, but we invite you to join the conversation, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And without further ado, let's get back into the list.
The San Francisco 49ers.
All right, Mike, San Francisco, they won 17-11 over Philly. Are you buying them?
Yeah, I'll buy the Niners. Honestly, this is a lot of me, I think, going off past precedent with them, Chris. When we look at what this team's done, knowing what they've been capable of when Jimmy Garoppolo has been healthy with the roster around him. I know they're getting the wide receiver situation straight. Brandon Ayuk, who's one of the more talented players on that team, wants more reps, and his coach is making sure he earns it. But I just believe I know what this team is capable of, and they've shown enough for me to believe that already.
Mike, listen, I want to buy into him. I do, just because I like Kyle Shanahan as a head coach. But I can't trust him right now. I'm not buying him. I'm selling the San Francisco 49ers, and it has a lot to do with their run game not being as dominant as it once was. And you need that when you have a quarterback that's limited from some of the physical skill sets like Jimmy Garoppolo. So, yeah, I'm not buying into this 49ers team yet. I don't think their defense is as dominant as they have been in years past, where they've had high-end success. So I just don't trust enough of the 49ers team in order to buy into them, especially in that division, the NFC West.
The Denver Broncos.
All right, Mike, Denver got a 23-13 win over the Jags. Mike, you buying the – excuse me, Chris, are you buying the Broncos?
No, I'm not buying the Denver Broncos. They false flagging. They flogging, as some people might say. I don't believe in this team, even though I love Teddy Bridgewater and him actually finding a home and feeling like he's got a lock on his starting quarterback job. I just don't think the Denver Broncos are that team that's going to be able to contend with the Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs in their own division. And quite frankly, I don't think from a talent standpoint, they're on par with the Los Angeles Chargers. So no, I'm not buying the Denver Broncos just because I don't necessarily see them as a team that can finish any better than fourth in that division.
I don't think I'm buying the Broncos either, Chris. I think it's going to be a dogfight for them between the Vegas Raiders and the Denver Broncos for third and fourth in that division. But I look and I just think Teddy Bridgewater, while he's a good story and I'm excited for him, I think that's a quarterback with a ceiling that we have seen. And I think as talented as that offense is, he's not the quarterback that takes it to the next level. So I'm going to sell them at this point as well. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Buy or sell, two or nah, for the 2-0 teams, all seven of them in the NFL.
The Los Angeles Rams.
All right, Mike. The Rams topped the Colts yesterday, 27-24. Mike, you buying the Rams?
Oh, yeah. Give me all the Rams on this one. The conversation we're going to have to start having is, are they the biggest threat to Tampa in the NFC? Are they the biggest threat on that side? We've seen Green Bay falter already, because you want to talk about the quarterback that was sent here to elevate. Chris, Matthew Stafford was brought in here for a reason, and so far he has delivered on that through two games.
Oh, no question, Mike. Now, I just want to make sure I got this straight. Are you predicting another NFC team to be able to host the Super Bowl? Are you going that far?
I don't think I'm ready to go there yet.
Okay.
Because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers still live here, and I still think overall that's the best team in football, but I think we could finally have someone new facing off against them in the NFC Championship. Like, this seems like a team that is that good, and we know the talent they've got on defense.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, I'm buying into the Los Angeles Rams too, man. And why they traded two first-round draft picks to Detroit for Matt Stafford, you saw that on display in yesterday's game, being able to have that game-winning drive in the fourth quarter where Matt Stafford puts Cooper Kupp to work. That's why you brought him over here. That takes your offense to another level. He can throw you back into games when you're down late. That's something that Jared Goff just couldn't do. So now Sean McVay has a lot more open to him in terms of things that he can call out of his playbook. And Matt Stafford has the arm talent to go out there and execute it. We know what that defense is, featuring two of the best players in the National Football League in Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. Now I feel like you have the counterpart to that on the offensive side with Matt Stafford. So, yeah, I'm buying that Los Angeles Rams team.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
All right, Chris, this is really a no-brainer with the Bucs, but I will ask you, though, as a 2-0 team after they got the 48-25 win over the Falcons, are the Bucs still the favorite in the NFC, Chris?
Yeah, they're still the favorite, but they do have some things that concern me, like the back end of that defense has to be something that raises an eyebrow. And listen, I get it. They had two pick sixes yesterday. Edwards came up. He showed up, showed out. But that defense, they allowed that Falcons offense to claw back into that game. That shouldn't have been as close as it was in that fourth quarter early on. And so I do have some concerns about that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense and what they're doing with their secondary. But overall, I mean, how could you not buy into a team that returns all 22 starters from a group that won the Super Bowl a year ago?
Yeah, I'm going to keep this short and sweet here. Tampa Bay's the crockpot team for the season. Set it and forget it. They're going to be here when we get to December and January football, and I will worry about their problems then when they start to matter. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio is brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. You can hit us up at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99 on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Again, buying or selling all the 2-0 teams in the NFL. Chris, no chance for 2-0 tonight. We got 0-1 meets 0-1, but the Packers and Lions in Monday Night Football. Is it just enough for Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay to go out and win this thing tonight? Division game for them against the kneecap biters here, but can they just get by with a win, or does it got to be something more for you?
No, I think it has to be something more, because they came out and laid an egg in the first game of the season, and Aaron Rodgers talked about it in a post-game interview of the lack of energy that the team had collectively. And I don't know how you start the season with a lack of energy. Like, the game that you're looking forward to throughout the course of training camp and the preseason is week one. And to come out and be as flat as they were against the New Orleans Saints in Jacksonville, that's inexcusable. So they got to send a message about who they want to be. And that's against the Detroit Lions, a division opponent. It's an opportunity for them to kind of get right. And I expect that Aaron Rodgers is going to take full advantage of it, because we've seen the last few years, Aaron Rodgers coming off of a loss, the guy is otherworldly. So that's what I'm anticipating seeing tonight. But to answer your question, there's no way that they can just skate by with a W. They need to have a statement win tonight.
Yeah, we talked to Tyler Foljam from the Daily Wager before, and he said he likes Green Bay and all 11.5 of those points that they're given. I'm inclined to agree, Chris. This has blowout written all over it. Now, I know we want people to tune in and watch Monday Night Football, and so maybe for that sake, I should say this is going to be a close game and you should watch. But at the same time, like, Aaron Rodgers, for all people talk about his personality type, the R-E-L-A-X stuff, like, this guy is a fierce competitor. Like, you talk to dudes that have played with him on that defense, and he'll get after you in practice. Like, he wants you to know that he's that dude out there. And I feel like this is the perfect opportunity for someone who hears and sees everything that is said about him in a primetime stage where we're going to make our decision about the Packers for the next quarter of the season off of what we see tonight for this team here. And so if they go out, blow them out, and put up big-time results, especially from 12, I think he knows he can change a lot of the conversation tonight, and we know he's got the ability to do it. So I think this is a perfect spot for Petty Aaron Rodgers to go ahead and remind everybody who daddy is for a little while longer.
Oh, no doubt about it. But in terms of that locker room, he owes his teammates back something. I mean, all the noise that's been around his team throughout the course of the offseason, and then that just being amplified after getting blown out in week one. Like, it's up to him to go out there and have one of those dominant performances and kind of put some of that stuff to bed. Just because those other guys, those other 52 guys in the locker room, they didn't have any parts of creating this conversation, but they have to deal with the fallout from it. So Aaron Rodgers has to do everything that he can to kind of, you know, alleviate some of that pressure, some of that conversation around this team. He owes it to those guys in the locker room, and I expect that he's going to come out and ball, man. He has to.
Yeah, you're right. There's no point at this point because – Man alive, like, I can't even begin to fathom the level of panic, the level of outrage we'll have if Green Bay even lets this be close tonight against the Lions. And I know, listen, this Lions team stuck back up on the 49ers in week one of the season, so they're going to fight you for four quarters. They're going to have to put them away early in this game. So we'll be watching to see just how fast the start can be for a team that said openly, their quarterback, that the energy wasn't there in week one for the Green Bay Packers. Coming up next, though, you want to talk about being ready for game day. I will tell you about one man's story of not being ready for what he was walking into a game this past weekend. Next, here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. We got to thank Tyler Fulgham and Mina Khan for joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. And, of course, the conversation always continues, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We got Monday Night Football tonight, and Mike and I are both predicting pain for Dan Campbell and the Fighting Kneecap Biters, the Detroit Lions. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers going to have something to say about that Week 1 L that they caught. But before we get on out of here, big fella, we got a little segment that we got to get into called Keep That Same Energy. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Let's get this thing going here. Canty and Golic Jr. keeping that same energy as we finish out the day. This was a pretty cool moment and a touching moment for a lot of people. Last night, heading into M&T Bank Stadium as the Ravens were getting ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs, the Ravens decided to pay tribute to Michael K. Williams with a little something from The Wire here. His character, Omar, whistling The Farmer in the Dell, one of the pinnacle moments of that series, something that people know pretty well, and Baltimore certainly paying homage to a series set very close to that city with this moment as the Ravens got ready to take the field. Chris, I can't imagine the chills and what they were like that moment in the stadium. It's so weird to think about. I was calling Maryland's first game of the season not far from Baltimore, and they played that. That was before Michael K. Williams had passed, and now looking back, almost eerie. But this, a touching tribute to an actor, a person, and certainly a character that meant so much to the area.
Oh, man, I love the ode that the Ravens gave to Michael K. Williams. A primetime game, the eyes and ears of the world watching that matchup between Lamar Jackson and Pat Mahomes. And here's the thing, I'll say this, Mike. I lived in Baltimore for 3 years when I was playing for the Ravens. And if I wanted to describe Baltimore culture to somebody, all you got to do is take a look at that series that from HBO The Wire. Like, it encapsulates all of it, the culture, the grittiness of it, and just to make sure that they had that nod to the culture in that game, knowing how much that series was in terms of a part of the fabric of that community. I thought that was a nice touch by Baltimore Ravens.
It was a really great moment for that team, for that city, to pay homage again to someone that we lost far too soon. Keeping that same energy, going back to this weekend in college football, Chris, Memphis played Mississippi State this weekend, and that game involved a 94-yard punt return touchdown by Memphis that should never have happened here. 5:58 left in the fourth quarter. Memphis was down 21-17, and two Mississippi State players came over. There was a punt, and they went over. Neither player possessed the ball when they attempted down the punt, and so Memphis wideout Calvin Austin III popped over, scooped up the ball, and ran that thing back for a touchdown here. Now, the kickball remained live because by rule it wasn't possessed by either player, nor did it come to rest in bounds with a player attempting to secure it. But there was an inadvertent stop the clock signal by the back judge, and the SEC came out Saturday and said that that play should have been stopped by a subsequent review and the ball placed back at that spot. A little bit too little, too late in that one, but boy, oh boy, did it give us a hell of a play to watch.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. But here's the thing. The rule of first touch, there's a heads-up play and the guy taking it to the house for a touchdown. I mean, I can't even be mad at him for having that level of awareness, but I will never understand why guys from the kicking team won't pick the ball up when they're going to down the football. It just makes no sense to me, Mike. I never got that. I never understood that.
Chris, it's mind-blowing. It's one of the first rules. I saw Robert Golden, who spent a long time as a special teams player and I believe a special teams captain for the Pittsburgh Steelers, commented on this post when ESPN put it up and said one of the first rules in special teams is pick the ball up and hand it to the official. Instead, you get a play that quite literally changes the outcome of this. 31-29, Memphis wins this game against Mississippi State in a big-time tilt here. Canty and Golic Jr., that is college football's play of the month, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Cool moment here this weekend, Chris, as we keep that same energy. Sophia LaSpina became the first female football player in Long Island history to score a touchdown on Saturday. The 15-year-old wideout caught a 4-yard touchdown reception in Mepham High School, and I hope I'm pronouncing that high school's name right. I apologize. They got a 49-21 win over Roslyn there. As we keep growing the game, Chris, reminder, it is for everybody, and this moment puts another great stamp on that.
Yeah, shout out to Sophia for being able to make it happen and making history in New York State high school football and just being able to come through and being able to ball out. You know, they always used to have that saying, oh, he plays like a girl. Well, in this instance, playing like a girl is a good thing. Seeing her go out there and beat up on some of the big boys, I love that she had the opportunity to make that piece of history. And I love seeing the participation of girls in high school football. We need more of that. So shout out to Sophia and her team out there in Long Island.
It was an incredible moment. Her coach, Anthony Krakow, said we were all super excited. She's worked exceptionally hard in practice with a great attitude and keeps getting better and better. It was a really cool moment to be a part of here. Chris, cool is anything but what I was this weekend. I was down in Oxford, Mississippi for Tulane's game against Ole Miss. Ole Miss put up some video game numbers here. We're going to start talking about Matt Corral and the Heisman and all these great things.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Pregame, I decided to take too far of a walk in the Mississippi heat, and the result, if anyone's watching on ESPN Plus or has seen on my social media, was me sweating through an entire dress shirt before we even got close to kickoff, Chris. It looks like I am wearing some sort of, like, you know, garment underneath this one. I promise you, I am bare-chested and just sweat in the pattern of a tank top over the top of that shirt. It was disgusting, and I feel
sick. Wow, so the sweat pattern looked like an A shirt under your dress shirt. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Chris, as a big guy, you know, when you're sweating from the shoulder meat, it's a different level. Like, that comes from your soul down there.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, I'm questioning whether it was the Mississippi heat, whether you had the meat sweats, or was it the cereal donuts that you partook in prior to kickoff? I'm not sure which. I know you're trying to pin it on Mississippi, but I feel like your sweats had a lot to do with your game plan and what you were eating going into that matchup.
Yeah, Chris, much like every answer I didn't know on the SATs, it was D, all the above on that one here. Meat sweats, donut sweats, and a little bit of Southern heat right there. But the Southern hospitality was off the charts there. Had a blast. Just going to try and sweat a little. I did 2 weeks in a row in Mississippi. Going to be on the road in Tallahassee this week. So Probably more sweat.
Very interesting conversation going on around that team, too.
Yes, lots more we can get into on that front. Lots more sweat, but lots more radio here. Stick around. Spain and Fitz take over next here on ESPN Radio.